So stoic. Of course, I suppose you'd be doing baby talk in Russian, so no one would ever know. They both laughed at that, and I turned away, grateful Mason was there to talk to. He was a good distraction from everything, because in addition to Dmitri ignoring me, Lissa and Christian were chatting on in their own little world, too. Sex appeared to have made them much more in love, and I wondered if I'd get to spend any time with her at all on the ski trip. She did eventually break away from him to give me my Christmas present. I opened the box and stared inside. I saw a string of maroon-colored beads, and the scent of roses floated out. What the? I lifted the beads out, and a heavy gold crucifix swung from the end of them. She'd given me a tchotchke. It was similar to a rosary, only smaller, bracelet size. Are you trying to convert me? I asked wryly. Lissa wasn't a religious nut or anything, but she believed in God and attended church regularly. Like many Maroi families who'd come from Russia and Eastern Europe, she was an Orthodox Christian. Me? I was pretty much an Orthodox agnostic. I figured God probably existed, but I didn't have the time or energy to investigate. Lissa respected that and never tried to push her faith on me, which made the gift that much weirder. Flip it over, she said, clearly amused at my shock. I did. On the back of the cross, a dragon wreathed in flowers had been carved into the gold. The Dragomir crest. I looked up at her, puzzled. It's a family heirloom, she said. One of my dad's good friends has been saving boxes of his stuff. This was in it. It belonged to my great-grandmother's guardian. Liss, I said. The tchotchke took on a whole new meaning. I can't. You can't give me something like this. Well, I certainly can't keep it. It's meant for a guardian. My guardian. I wound the beads around one wrist. The cross felt cool against my skin. You know, I teased, there's a good possibility I'll get kicked out of school before I can become your guardian. She grinned. Well, then you can give it back. Everyone laughed. Tasha started to say something, then stopped when she looked up at the door. Janine! My mother stood there, looking as stiff and impassive as ever. Sorry I'm late, she said. I had business to take care of. Business, as always, even on Christmas. I felt my stomach turn and heat rise to my cheeks as the details of our fight came rushing back to my mind. She'd never sent one word of communication since it had happened 2 days ago, not even when I was in the infirmary. No apologies, nothing. I gritted my teeth. She sat down with us and soon joined the conversation. I'd long since discovered she could really only talk about one subject, guardian business. I wondered if she had any hobbies. The Badika attack was on everyone's mind, and this drove her into a conversation about some similar fight she'd been in. To my horror, Mason was riveted by her every word. Well, decapitations aren't as easy as they seem, she said in her matter-of-fact way. I'd never thought they were easy at all, but her tone suggested that she believed everyone thought they were cake. You've got to get through the spinal cord and tendons. Through the bond, I felt Lissa grow queasy. She wasn't one for gruesome talk. Mason's eyes lit up. What's the best weapon to do it with? My mother considered. An axe. You can get more weight behind it. She made a swinging motion by way of illustration. Cool, he said. Man, I hope they let me carry an axe. It was a comical and ludicrous idea, since axes were hardly convenient weapons to carry around. For half a second, the thought of Mason walking down the street with an axe over his shoulder lightened my mood a little. The moment quickly passed. I honestly couldn't believe we were having this conversation on Christmas. Her presence had soured everything. Fortunately, the gathering eventually dispersed. Christian and Lissa went off to do their own thing, and Dmitri and Tasha apparently had more catching up to do. Mason and I were well on our way to the Dampier dorm when my mother joined us. None of us said anything. Stars cluttered the black sky, sharp and bright. Their glitter matched in the ice and snow around us. I wore my ivory parka with fake fur trimming. It did a good job keeping my body warm, even though it did nothing against the chilly gusts that seared my face. The whole time we walked, I kept expecting my mother to turn off toward the other guardian areas, but she came right inside the dorm with us.
"I've been wanting to talk to you," she finally said.
My alarms clicked on. What had I done now? That was all she said, but Mason picked up on the hint immediately. He was neither stupid nor oblivious to social cues, though at that moment, I kind of wished he was. I also found it ironic that he wanted to fight every Strigoi in the world but was afraid of my mother. He glanced at me apologetically, shrugged, and said, "Hey, I've gotta get, somewhere. I'll see you later." I watched with regret as he left, wishing I could run after him. Probably my mom would only tackle me and punch my other eye if I tried to escape. Better to do things her way and get this over with. Shifting uncomfortably, I looked everywhere but at her and waited for her to speak. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed a few people glancing over at us. Recalling how everyone in the world seems to know about her giving me the black eye, I suddenly decided I didn't want witnesses around for whatever lecture she was about to unleash on me.
"You want to, go to my room?"
I asked. She looked surprised, almost uncertain.
"Sure."
I led her upstairs, keeping a safe distance away as we walked. Awkward tension built between us. She didn't say anything when we reached my room, but I saw her examine every detail carefully, as though a Strigoi might be lurking in there. I sat on the bed and waited while she paced, unsure what I should do. She ran her fingers over a stack of books on animal behavior and evolution.
"Are these for a report?" she asked.
"No, I'm just interested in it, that's all." Her eyebrows rose. She hadn't known that. But how would she? She didn't know anything about me. She continued her appraisal, stopping to study little things that apparently surprised her about me. A picture of Lissa and me dressed up like fairies for Halloween. A bag of sweet tarts. It was as though my mother were meeting me for the first time. Abruptly, she turned and extended her hand toward me.
"Here."
Startled, I leaned forward and held my palm out underneath hers. Something small and cool dropped into my hand. It was a round pendant, a small one, not much bigger than a dime in diameter. A base of silver held a flat disc of colored glass circles. Frowning, I ran my thumb over its surface. It was strange, but the circles almost made it look like an eye. The inner one was small, just like a pupil. It was so dark blue that it looked black. Surrounding it was a larger circle of pale blue, which was in turn surrounded by a circle of white. A very, very thin ring of that dark blue color circled the outside.
"Thanks," I said. I hadn't expected anything from her. The gift was weird. Why the hell would she give me an eye? But it was a gift. I didn't get you anything."
My mom nodded, face blank and unconcerned once more.
"It's fine. I don't need anything."
She turned away again and started walking around the room. She didn't have a lot of space to do it, but her shorter height gave her a smaller stride. Each time she passed in front of the window over my bed, the light would catch her auburn hair and light it up. I watched her curiously and realized she was as nervous as me. She halted in her pacing and glanced back toward me.
"How's your eye?"
"Getting better."
"Good."
She opened her mouth, and I had a feeling she was on the verge of apologizing, but she didn't. When she started pacing again, I decided I couldn't stand the inactivity. I began putting my presents away. I'd gotten a pretty nice haul of stuff this morning. One of them was a silk dress from Tasha, red and embroidered with flowers. My mother watched me hang it in the room's tiny closet.
"That was very nice of Tasha."
"Yeah," I agreed. "I didn't know she was going to get me anything. I really like her."
"Me too."
I turned from the closet in surprise and stared at my mom. Her astonishment mirrored mine. If I hadn't known any better, I'd have said we'd just agreed on something. Maybe Christmas miracles did happen.
Guardian Belkov will be a good match for her.
I blinked, not entirely sure what she was talking about. Dmitri?
Guardian Belkov,
she corrected sternly, still not approving of my casual way of addressing him. What kind of match? I asked. She raised an eyebrow.
You haven't heard. She's asked him to be her guardian, since she doesn't have one.
I felt like I'd been punched again. But he's assigned here, and to Lyssa.
Arrangements can be made, and regardless of the Ozera reputation, she's still royal. If she pushes, she can get her way.
I stared bleakly into space. Well, I guess they are friends and everything.
More than that, or possibly could be.
Bam! Punched again. What?
Hmm? Oh, she's interested in him.
By my mother's tone, it was clear that romantic matters actually held no interest for her.
She's willing to have Dampier children, so it's possible they might eventually make an, arrangement, if he were her guardian.
Oh. My. God. Time froze. My heart stopped beating. I realized my mother was waiting for a response. She was leaning against my desk, watching me. She might be able to hunt down Strigoi, but she was oblivious to my feelings. Is he going to do it? Be her guardian? I asked, weakly. My mom shrugged.
I don't think he's agreed to it yet. But of course he will. It's a great opportunity.
Of course, I echoed. Why would Dmitri turn down the chance to be a guardian to a friend of his and to have a baby? I think my mom said something else after that, but I didn't hear it. I didn't hear anything. I kept thinking about Dmitri leaving the academy, leaving me. I thought about the way he and Tasha had gotten along with each other so well. And then, after those recollections, my imagination started improvising future scenarios. Tasha and Dmitri together. Touching. Kissing. Naked. Other things. I squeezed my eyes shut for half a second and then opened them. I'm really tired. My mom stopped mid-sentence. I had no idea what she'd been saying before I interrupted her. I'm really tired, I repeated. I could hear the hollowness in my own voice. Empty. No emotion. Thanks for the eye, thing. But if you don't mind... My mother stared at me in surprise, her features open and confused. Then, just like that, her usual wall of cool professionalism slammed back into place. Until that moment, I hadn't realized how much she'd let it up. But she had. For just a brief time, she'd made herself vulnerable with me. That vulnerability was now gone.
Of course, she said stiffly. I don't want to bother you.
I wanted to tell her it wasn't that. I wanted to tell her I wasn't kicking her out for any personal reason. And I wanted to tell her that I wished she were the kind of loving, understanding mother you always hear about. One I could confide in. Maybe even a mother I could discuss my troubled love life with. God, I wished I could tell anyone about that, actually. Especially right now. But I was too caught up in my own personal drama to say a word. I felt like someone had ripped my heart out and tossed it across the other side of the room. There was a burning, agonizing pain in my chest, and I had no idea how it could ever be filled. It was one thing to accept that I couldn't have Dmitri. It was something entirely different to realize someone else could. I didn't say anything else to her because my speech capabilities no longer existed. Fury glinted in her eyes, and her lips flattened out into that tight expression of displeasure she so often wore. Without another word, she turned around and left, slamming the door behind her. That door slam was something I would have done too, actually. I guess we really did share some genes. but I forgot about her almost immediately. I just kept sitting there and thinking, thinking and imagining. I spent the rest of the day doing little more than that. I skipped dinner. I shed a few tears. But mostly, I just sat on my bed, thinking and growing more and more depressed. I also discovered that the only thing worse than imagining Dmitri and Tasha together was remembering when he and I had been together. He would never touch me again like that. Never kiss me again. This was the worst Christmas ever. Chapter 10. The ski trip couldn't have come a moment too soon. It was impossible to get the Dmitri and Tasha thing out of my head, but at least packing and getting ready made sure I didn't devote 100% of my brain power to him. More like 95%. I had other things to distract me too. The Academy might, rightfully, be overprotective when it came to us, but sometimes that translated into pretty cool stuff. Example, the Academy had access to a couple of private jets. This meant no Strigoi could attack us at an airport, and it also meant we got to travel in style. Each jet was smaller than a commercial plane, but the seats were cushy and had lots of legroom. They extended far enough back that you could practically lie down to sleep. On long flights, we had little consoles in the seats that gave us TV movie options. Sometimes they'd even break out fancy meals. I was betting this flight, however, would be too short for any movies or substantial food. We left late on the 26th. When I boarded the jet, I looked around for Lissa, wanting to talk to her. We hadn't really spoken after the Christmas brunch. I wasn't surprised to see her sitting with Christian, and they didn't look like they wanted to be interrupted. I couldn't hear their conversation, but he'd put his arm around her and had that relaxed, flirty expression that only she could bring out. I remained fully convinced that he could never do as good a job as me of taking care of her, but he clearly made her happy. I put on a smile and nodded at them as I passed down the aisle toward where Mason was waving at me. As I did, I also walked by Dmitri and Tasha sitting together. I pointedly ignored them. "Hey," I said, sliding into the seat beside Mason. He smiled at me.
"Hey, you ready for the ski challenge?"
"As ready as I'll ever be." "Don't worry," he said.
"I'll go easy on you."
I scoffed and leaned my head back against the seat.
"You're so delusional." "Sane guys are boring."
To my surprise, he slid his hand over mine. His skin was warm, and I felt my own skin tingle where he touched me. It startled me. I'd convinced myself Dmitri was the only one I'd ever respond to again. "It's time to move on," I thought. "Dmitri obviously has. You should have done it a long time ago." I laced my fingers with Mason's, catching him off guard. "I do. This is going to be fun." And it was. I tried to keep reminding myself that we were here because of a tragedy, that there were Strigoi and humans out there who might strike again. No one else seemed to remember that, though, and I admit, I was having a difficult time myself. The resort was gorgeous. It was built to sort of look like a log cabin, but no pioneer cabin could have held hundreds of people or had such luxury accommodations. 3 stories of gleaming golden-color wood sat among lofty pine trees. The windows were tall and gracefully arched, tinted for Moroi convenience. Crystal lanterns, electric but shaped to look like torches, hung around all the entrances, giving the entire building a glittering, almost bejeweled look. Mountains, which my enhanced eyes could just barely make out in the night, surrounded us, and I bet the view would have been breathtaking when it was light out. One side of the grounds led off to the skiing area, complete with steep hills and moguls, as well as lifts and tow ropes. Another side of the lodge had an ice rink, which delighted me since I'd missed out that one day by the cabin. Near that, smooth hills were reserved for sledding. And that was just the outside. Inside, all sorts of arrangements had been made to cater to Moroi needs. Feeders stayed on hand, ready to serve 24 hours a day. The slopes ran on a nocturnal schedule. Wards and guardians circled the entire place, everything a living vampire could want. The main lobby had a cathedral ceiling and an enormous chandelier hanging over it. Its floor was intricately tiled marble, and the front desk stayed open around the clock, ready to indulge our every need. The rest of the lodge, hallways and lounges, had a red, black, and gold color scheme. The deep shade of red dominated over the other hues, and I wondered if its resemblance to blood was a coincidence. Mirrors and art adorned the walls, and little ornamental tables had been placed here and there. They held vases of pale green, purple-spotted orchids that filled the air with a spicy scent. The room I shared with Lyssa was bigger than our dorm rooms put together and had the same rich colors as the rest of the lodge. The carpet was so plush and deep that I immediately shed my shoes at the door and walked in barefoot, luxuriating in the way my feet sank into that softness. We had king-size beds, covered in feather duvets, and set with so many pillows that I swore a person could get lost in them all and never be seen again. French doors opened onto a spacious balcony, which, considering we were on the top floor, would have been cool if not for the fact it was freezing outside. I suspected the two-person hot tub on the far end would go a long way to make up for the cold. Drowning in so much luxury, I reached an overload point where the rest of the accommodations started swimming together. The jetted marble bathtub, the plasma screen TV, the basket of chocolate and other snacks. When we finally decided to go skiing, I had to practically drag myself from the room. I could probably have spent the rest of my vacation lounging in there and been perfectly content. But we finally ventured outside, and once I managed to push Dimitri and my mother out of my head, I started to enjoy myself. It helped that the lodge was so enormous, there was little chance of running into them. For the first time in weeks, I was able to finally focus on Mason and realize just how much fun he was. I also got to hang out with Lyssa more than I had in a while, which put me in an even better mood. With Lyssa, Christian, Mason, and me, we were able to get a kind of double date thing going. The four of us spent almost all of the first day skiing, though the two Maroi had a bit of trouble keeping up. Considering what Mason and I went through in our classes, he and I weren't afraid to try daring stunts. Our competitive natures made us eager to go out of our way to outdo each other.
"You guys are suicidal," remarked Christian at one point.
It was dark outside, and tall light posts illuminated his bemused face. He and Lyssa had been waiting at the bottom of the Mogul Hill, watching Mason and me come down. We'd been moving at insane speeds. The part of me that had been trying to learn control and wisdom from Dimitri knew it was dangerous, but the rest of me liked embracing that recklessness. That dark streak of rebelliousness still hadn't let me go. Mason grinned as we skidded to a halt, sending up a spray of snow.
"Nah, this is just a warm-up. I mean, Rose has been able to keep up with me the whole time. Kid stuff."
Lyssa shook her head. "Aren't you guys taking this too far?" Mason and I looked at each other.
"No."
She shook her head. "Well, we're going inside. Try not to kill yourselves." She and Christian left, arm in arm. I watched them go, then turned back to Mason.
"I'm good for a while longer. You?"
"Absolutely."
We took a lift back up to the top of the hill. When we were just about to head down, Mason pointed.
"Okay,
how about this? Hit those moguls there, then jump over that ridge, swing back with a hairpin turn, dodge those trees, and land there." I followed his finger as he pointed out a jagged path down one of the biggest slopes. I frowned. "That one really is Insane Mace."
"Ah,"
he said triumphantly. "She finally cracks." I glowered. "She does not." After another survey of his crazy route, I conceded.
"Okay, let's do it,"
he gestured.
"You first."
I took a deep breath and leapt off. My skis slid smoothly over the snow, and piercing wind blasted into my face. I made the first jump neatly and precisely, but as the next part of the course sped forward,
I realized just how dangerous it really was. In that split second, I had a decision to make. If I didn't do it, I'd never hear the end of it from Mason, and I really wanted to show him up. If I did manage it, I could feel pretty secure about my awesomeness. But if I tried and messed up, I could break my neck.
Somewhere in my head, a voice that sounded suspiciously like Dimitri's started talking about wise choices and learning when to show restraint. I decided to ignore that voice and went for it. This course was as hard as I'd feared, but I pulled it off flawlessly, one insane move after another. Snow flew up around me as I made each sharp, dangerous turn. When I safely reached bottom, I looked up and saw Mason gesturing wildly. I couldn't make out his expression or words, but I could imagine his cheers. I waved back and waited for him to follow suit. But he didn't. Because when Mason got halfway down, he wasn't able to pull off one of the jumps. His skis caught and his legs twisted. Down he went. I reached him at about the same time some of the resort staff did. To everyone's relief, Mason hadn't broken his neck or anything else. His ankle did appear to have a nasty sprain, however, which was probably going to limit his skiing for the rest of the trip. One of the instructors monitoring the slopes ran forward, fury all over her face. "What were you kids thinking?" she exclaimed. She turned on me. "I couldn't believe it when you did those stupid stunts." Her glare fixed on Mason next. "And then you had to go ahead and copy her." I wanted to argue that it had been all his idea, but blame didn't matter at this point. I was just glad he was all right. But as we all went inside, guilt began to gnaw at me. I had acted irresponsibly. What if he'd been seriously injured? Horrible visions danced through my mind. Mason with a broken leg, a broken neck. What had I been thinking? No one had made me do that course. Mason had suggested it, but I hadn't fought back. Goodness knew I probably could have. I might have had to endure some mockery, but Mason was crazy enough about me that feminine wiles probably would have stopped this madness. I'd gotten caught up in the excitement and the risk, much as I had in kissing Dimitri, not giving enough thought to the consequences because secretly, inside of me, that impulsive desire to be wild still lurked. Mason had it too, and his called to me. That mental Dimitri voice chastised me once more. After Mason was safely returned to the lodge and had ice on his ankle, I carried our equipment back outside toward the storage buildings. When I went back inside, I went through a different doorway than I normally used. This entrance was set behind a huge, open porch with an ornate wooden railing. The porch was built into the side of the mountain and had a breathtaking view of the other peaks and valleys around us, if you felt like standing around long enough in freezing temperatures to admire it, which most people didn't. I walked up the steps to the porch, stomping snow off my boots as I did. A thick scent, both spicy and sweet, hung in the air. Something about it felt familiar, but before I could identify it, a voice suddenly spoke to me out of the shadows. "Hey, little Dampier." Startled, I realized someone was indeed standing on the porch. A guy. A Maroi, leaned against the wall not far from the door. He brought a cigarette up to his mouth, took a long drag, and then dropped it on the floor. He stamped the butt out and crooked me a smile. That was the scent, I realized. Clove cigarettes. Warily, I stopped and crossed my arms as I took him in. He was a little shorter than Dimitri, but wasn't as lanky as some Maroi guys ended up looking. A long charcoal coat, probably made out of some insanely expensive cashmere wool blend, fit his body exceptionally well, and the leather dress shoes he wore indicated more money still. He had brown hair that looked like it had been purposely styled to appear a little unkempt, and his eyes were either blue or green. I didn't have quite enough light to know for sure. His face was cute, I supposed, and I pegged him to be a couple years older than me. He looked like he'd just come from a dinner party. "Yeah?" I asked. His eyes swept over my body. I was used to attention from Maroi guys. It just usually wasn't so obvious. And I usually wasn't bundled up in winter clothing and sporting a black eye. He shrugged. Just saying hi, that's all. I waited for more, but all he did was stuff his hands into the coat's pockets. With a shrug of my own, I took a couple steps forward.
You smell good, you know,
he suddenly said. I stopped walking again and gave him a puzzled look, which only made his sly smile grow a little bigger.
What?
You smell good, he repeated. Are you joking? I've been sweating all day. I'm disgusting. I wanted to walk away, but there was something eerily compelling about this guy. Like a train wreck. I didn't find him attractive per se. I was just suddenly interested in talking to him.
Sweat isn't a bad thing,
he said, leaning his head against the wall and looking upward thoughtfully.
Some of the best things in life happen while sweating.
Yeah.
If you get too much of it and it gets old and stale, it turns pretty gross. But on a beautiful woman, intoxicating. If you could smell things like a vampire does, you'd know what I'm talking about. Most people mess it all up and drown themselves in perfume. Perfume can be good, especially if you get one that goes with your chemistry. But you only need a hint. Mix about 20% of that with 80% of your own perspiration.
He tilted his head to the side and looked at me.
Dead sexy.
I suddenly remembered Dimitri and his aftershave. Yeah, that had been dead sexy. But I certainly wasn't going to tell this guy about it. Well, thanks for the hygiene lesson, I said. But I don't own any perfume, and I'm going to go shower all this hot, sweaty action off me. Sorry. He pulled out a pack of cigarettes and offered it to me. He moved only a step closer, but it was enough for me to smell something else on him. Alcohol. I shook my head at the cigarettes, and he tapped one out for himself. Bad habit, I said, watching him light it.
One of many,
he replied. He inhaled deeply.
You here with St. Vlad's?
Yep.
So you're going to be a guardian when you grow up.
Obviously. He exhaled smoke, and I watched it drift away into the night. Heightened vampire senses or no, it was a wonder he could smell anything around those cloves.
How long until you grow up?
He asked.
I might need a guardian.
I graduate in the spring, but I'm already spoken for. Sorry. Surprise flickered in his eyes.
Yeah? Who is he?
She's Vasilisa Dragomir.
Ah.
His face split into a huge grin.
I knew you were trouble as soon as I saw you. You're Janine Hathaway's daughter.
I'm Rose Hathaway, I corrected, not wanting to be defined by my mother.
Nice to meet you, Rose Hathaway.
He extended a gloved hand to me that I hesitantly took.
Adrian Ivashkov.
And you think I'm trouble? I muttered. The Ivashkovs were a royal family, one of the wealthiest and most powerful. They were the kind of people who thought they could get anything they wanted and walked over those in their way. No wonder he was so arrogant. He laughed. He had a nice laugh, rich and almost melodious. It made me think of warm caramel dripping from a spoon.
Handy, huh? Each of our reputations precedes us.
I shook my head. You don't know anything about me, and I only know your family. I don't know anything about you.
Want to?
He asked, tauntingly. Sorry, I'm not into older guys.
I'm 21. Not that much older.
I have a boyfriend. It was a small lie. Mason certainly wasn't my boyfriend yet, but I hoped Adrian would leave me alone if he thought I was taken.
Funny you didn't mention that right away,
Adrian mused.
He didn't give you that black eye, did he?
I felt myself blushing, even in the cold. I'd been hoping he wouldn't notice the eye, which was stupid. With his vampire eyes, he'd probably noticed as soon as I stepped onto the porch. He wouldn't be alive if he did. I got it during practice. I mean,
I'm training to be a guardian. Our classes are always rough.
That's pretty hot, he said.
He dropped the second cigarette to the ground and put it out with his foot. Punching me in the eye? Well, no, of course not. I meant that the idea of getting rough with you is hot. I'm a big fan of full contact sports.
I'm sure you are, I said dryly. He was arrogant and presumptuous, yet I still couldn't quite force myself to leave. The sound of footsteps behind me made me turn. Maya came around the path and walked up the steps. When she saw us, she stopped suddenly.
Hey, Maya.
She glanced between the two of us.
Another guy?
She asked. From her tone, you would have thought I had my own harem of men. Adrian gave me a questioning, amused look. I gritted my teeth and decided not to dignify that with a response. I opted for uncharacteristic politeness. Maya, this is Adrian Ivashkov. Adrian turned on the same charm he'd used on me. He shook her hand.
Always a pleasure to meet a friend of Rose's, especially a pretty one.
He spoke like he and I had known each other since childhood.
We aren't friends, I said. So much for politeness.
Rose only hangs out with guys and psychopaths, said Maya. Her voice carried the usual scorn she harbored for me, but there was a look on her face that showed Adrian had clearly caught her interest.
Well, he said cheerfully,
since I'm both a psychopath and a guy, that would explain why we're such good friends.
You and I aren't friends either, I told him. He laughed.
Always playing hard to get, huh?
She's not that hard to get, said Maya, clearly upset that Adrian was paying more attention to me.
Just ask half the guys at our school.
Yeah, I retorted. And you can ask the other half about Maya. If you can do a favor for her, she'll do lots of favors for you. When she declared war on Lissa and me, Maya had managed to get a couple of guys to tell everyone at school that I'd done some pretty awful things with them. The ironic thing was that she'd gotten them to lie for her by sleeping with them herself. A flicker of embarrassment passed over her face, but she held her ground.
Well, she said, at least I don't do them for free.
Adrian made some cat noises.
Are you done?
I asked. It's past your bedtime, and the grown-ups would like to talk now. Maya's youthful looks were a sore point with her, one I frequently enjoyed exploiting.
Sure,
she said crisply. Her cheeks turned pink, intensifying her porcelain doll appearance.
I have better things to do anyway.
She turned toward the door, then paused with her hand resting on it. She glanced toward Adrian.
Her mom gave her that black eye, you know.
She went inside. The fancy glass doors swung shut behind her. Adrian and I stood there in silence. Finally, he took out the cigarettes again and lit another.
Your mom?
Shut up.
You're one of those people who either has soulmates or mortal enemies, aren't you? No in between. You and Vasilisa are probably like sisters, huh?
I guess.
How is she?
Huh? What do you mean? He shrugged, and if I didn't know better, I'd have to say he was overdoing casualness.
I don't know, I mean, I know you guys ran away, and there was that stuff with her family and Viktor Dashkov.
I stiffened at the reference to Viktor.
So?
Dunno. Just figured it might be a lot for her to, you know, handle.
I studied him carefully, wondering what he was getting at. There had been a brief leak about Lissa's fragile mental health, but it had been well contained. Most people had forgotten about it or assumed it was a lie. I've gotta go. I decided avoidance was the best tactic just now.
Are you sure?
He sounded only mildly disappointed. Mostly, he seemed as cocky and amused as before. Something about him still intrigued me, but whatever it wasn't enough to combat everything else I was feeling, or to risk discussing Lissa.
I thought it was time for the grown-ups to talk. Lots of grown-up things I'd like to talk about.
It's late, I'm tired, and your cigarettes are giving me a headache, I growled.
I suppose that's fair.
He drew in on the cigarette and let out the smoke.
Some women think they make me look sexy.
I think you smoke them so you have something to do while you're thinking up your next witty line. He choked on the smoke, caught between inhaling and laughing.
Rose Hathaway? I can't wait to see you again. If you're this charming while tired and annoyed, and this gorgeous while bruised and in ski clothes, you must be devastating at your peak.
If by devastating you mean that you should fear for your life, then yeah, you're right. I jerked open the door. Good night, Adrian.
I'll see you soon.
Not likely, I told you. I'm not into older guys. I walked into the lodge. As the door closed, I just barely heard him call behind me.
Sure you aren't.
Chapter 11. Lissa was up and gone before I even stirred the next morning, which meant I had the bathroom to myself while I got ready for the day. I loved that bathroom. It was enormous. My king-size bed would have fit comfortably inside it. A scalding shower with three different nozzles woke me up, though my muscles ached from yesterday. As I stood in front of the full-length mirror and combed my hair, I saw with some disappointment that the bruise was still there. It was significantly lighter, however, and had turned yellowish. Some concealer and powder almost entirely covered it up. I headed downstairs in search of food. The dining room was just shutting down breakfast, but one of the waitresses gave me a couple of peach marzipan scones to go. Munching on one as I walked, I expanded my senses to get a feel for where Lissa was. After a couple of moments, I sensed her on the other side of the lodge, away from the student rooms. I followed the trail until I arrived at a room on the third floor. I knocked. Christian opened the door.
Sleeping Beauty arrives. Welcome.
He ushered me inside. Lissa sat cross-legged on the room's bed and smiled when she saw me. The room was as sumptuous as mine, but most of the furniture had been shoved aside to make space, and in that open area, Tasha stood.
Good morning,
she said. Hey, I said. So much for avoiding her. Lissa patted a spot beside her. You've got to see this. What's going on? I sat down on the bed and finished the last of the scone. Bad things, she said, mischievously. You'll approve. Christian walked over to the empty space and faced Tasha. They regarded each other, forgetting about Lissa and me. I'd apparently interrupted something.
So why can't I just stick with the consuming spell? Asked Christian.
Because it uses a lot of energy, she told him. Even with jeans and a ponytail, and the scar, she managed to look ridiculously cute.
Plus, it'll most likely kill your opponent, he scoffed. Why wouldn't I want to kill a Strigoi?
You might not always be fighting one. Or maybe you need information from them. Regardless, you should be prepared either way. They were practicing offensive magic, I realized. Excitement and interest replaced the sullenness I'd acquired upon seeing Tasha. Lissa hadn't been kidding about them doing bad things. I'd always suspected they were practicing offensive magic, but wow. Thinking about it and actually seeing it were two very different things. Using magic as a weapon was forbidden, a punishable offense. A student experimenting with it might be forgiven and simply disciplined. But for an adult, to actively be teaching a minor? Yeah, that could get Tasha in major trouble. For half a second, I toyed with the idea of turning her in. Immediately, I dismissed the notion. I might hate her for making moves on Dimitri, but part of me sort of believed in what she and Christian were doing. Plus, it was just cool. A distracting spell is almost as useful, she continued. Her blue eyes took on the intense focus I often saw Maroi get while using magic. Her wrist flicked forward, and a streak of fire snaked past Christian's face. It didn't touch him, but from the way he flinched, I suspected it had been close enough for him to feel the heat.
Try it, she told him.
Christian hesitated for only a moment and then made the same hand motion she had. Fire streaked out, but it had none of the finely tuned control hers had had. He also didn't have her aim,
It went straight for her face, but before it could touch her, it parted and split around her, almost like it had hit an invisible shield. She deflected it with her own magic.
Not bad, aside from the fact that you would have burned my face off.
Even I wouldn't want her face burned off. But her hair? Ah, yes. We'd see how pretty she was without that raven black mane.
She and Christian practiced a while longer. He improved as time went by, though he clearly had a ways to go before he had Tasha's skill. My interest grew and grew as they went on, and I found myself pondering all the possibilities this kind of magic could offer. They wrapped up their lesson when Tasha said she had to go. Christian sighed, clearly frustrated that he hadn't been able to master the spell in an hour. His competitive nature was almost as strong as mine.
I still think it'd be easier just to burn them entirely, he argued.
Tasha smiled as she brushed her hair into a tighter ponytail. Yeah, she could definitely do without that hair, particularly since I knew how much Dimitri liked long hair.
Easier because it involves less focus. It's sloppy. Your magic will be stronger in the long run if you can learn this. And, like I said, it has its uses.
I didn't want to agree with her, but I couldn't help it.
It could be really useful if you were fighting with a guardian, I said excitedly. Especially if completely burning a Strigoi takes so much energy. This way, you use just a quick burst of your strength to distract the Strigoi. And it will distract one since they hate fire so much. Then, that's all the time a guardian would need to stake them. You could take down a whole bunch of Strigoi that way.
Tasha grinned at me. Some Moroi, like Lyssa and Adrian, smiled without showing their teeth. Tasha always showed hers, including the fangs.
Exactly. You and I'll have to go Strigoi hunting someday, she teased.
I don't think so, I replied.
The words in and of themselves weren't that bad, but the tone I used to deliver them certainly was. Cold, unfriendly. Tasha looked momentarily surprised at my abrupt change in attitude, but shrugged it off. Shock from Lyssa traveled to me through the bond. Tasha didn't seem bothered, however. She chatted with us a bit longer and made plans to see Christian for dinner. Lyssa gave me a sharp look as she, Christian, and I walked down the elaborate spiral staircase leading back down to the lobby.
What was that about? She asked.
What was what about? I asked innocently.
Rose, she said meaningfully. It was hard to play dumb when your friend knew you could read her mind. I knew exactly what she was talking about.
You being a bitch to Tasha.
I wasn't that much of a bitch.
You were rude, she exclaimed, stepping out of the way of a bunch of Moroi children who came tearing through the lobby. They were bundled up in parkas, and a weary-looking Moroi ski instructor followed them. I put my hands on my hips.
Look, I'm just grumpy, okay? Didn't get much sleep. Besides, I'm not like you. I don't have to be polite all the time.
As happened so often lately, I couldn't believe what I'd just said. Lyssa stared at me, more astonished than hurt. Christian glowered, on the verge of snapping back at me, when Mason mercifully approached us. He hadn't needed a cast or anything, but he had a slight limp to his walk.
Hey there, Hopalong, I said, sliding my hand into his.
Christian put his anger for me on hold and turned to Mason.
Is it true your suicidal moves finally caught up with you?
Mason's eyes were on me.
Is it true you were hanging out with Adrian Ivashkov?
I what?
I heard you guys got drunk last night.
You did? Asked Lyssa, startled.
I looked between both their faces.
No, of course not. I barely know him.
But you do. Know him,
pushed Mason.
Barely.
He's got a bad reputation, warned Lyssa.
Yeah,
said Christian.
He goes through a lot of girls.
I couldn't believe this.
Will you guys lay off? I talked to him for like 5 minutes, and that's only because he was blocking my way inside. Where are you getting all this?
Immediately, I answered my own question.
Maya.
Mason nodded and had the grace to look embarrassed.
Since when do you talk to her? I asked.
I just ran into her, that's all, he told me.
And you believed her? You know she lies half the time.
Yeah, but there's usually some truth in the lies, and you did talk to him.
Yes, talk. That's it. I really had been trying to give some serious thought about dating Mason, so I didn't appreciate him not believing me. He had actually helped me unravel Maya's lies earlier in the school year, so I was surprised he'd been so paranoid about them now. Maybe if his feelings really had grown for me, he was more susceptible to jealousy. Surprisingly, it was Christian who came to the rescue and changed the subject.
I suppose there's no skiing today, huh?
He pointed to Mason's ankle, immediately triggering an indignant response.
What, you think this is going to slow me down?
Asked Mason. His anger diminished, replaced by that burning need to prove himself, the need he and I both shared. Lissa and Christian looked at him like he was crazy, but I knew nothing we said would stop him.
You guys want to come with us?
I asked Lissa and Christian. Lissa shook her head. We can't. We have to go to this luncheon being hosted by the Contas. Christian groaned.
Well, you have to go.
She elbowed him. So do you. The invitation said I get to bring a guest. Besides, this is just a warm-up for the big one.
Which one is that?
Asked Mason.
Priscilla Vada's huge dinner,
sighed Christian. Seeing him look so pained made me smile.
The queen's best friend. All the snobbiest royals will be there, and I'll have to wear a suit.
Mason flashed me a grin. His earlier antagonism was gone.
Skiing's sounding better and better, huh?
Less of a dress code. We left the Maroi behind and went outside. Mason couldn't compete with me in the same way he had yesterday. His movements were slow and awkward. Still, he did remarkably well when one considered everything. The injury wasn't as bad as we'd feared, but he had the prudence to stick to extremely easy runs. The full moon hung in the blankness, a glowing sphere of silvery white. The electric lights overpowered most of its illumination on the ground, but here and there, in the shadows, the moon just barely managed to cast its glow. I wished it were bright enough to reveal the surrounding mountain range, but those peaks stayed shrouded in darkness. I'd forgotten to look at them when it was light out earlier. The runs were super simple for me, but I stayed with Mason and only occasionally teased him about how his remedial skiing was putting me to sleep. Boring runs or no, it was just nice to be outside with my friends, and the activity stirred my blood enough to warm me against the chill air. The light posts lit up the snow, turning it into a vast sea of white, the flakes, crystals sparkling faintly. And if I managed to turn away and block the lights from my field of vision, I could look up and see the stars spilling over the sky. They stood out stark and crystalline in the clear, freezing air. We stayed out for most of the day again, but this time I called it quits early, pretending to be tired, so Mason could get a break. He might manage easy skiing with his tender ankle, but I could tell it was starting to hurt him. Mason and I headed back toward the lodge, walking very close to each other, laughing about something we'd seen earlier. Suddenly, I saw a streak of white in my peripheral vision, and a snowball smashed into Mason's face. I immediately went on the defensive, jerking backward and peering around. Whoops and cries sounded from an area of the resort grounds that held storage sheds and was interspersed with looming pines.
"Too slow, Ashford,"
someone called.
"Doesn't pay to be in love."
More laughs. Mason's best friend, Eddie Castile, and a few other novices from school materialized from behind a cluster of trees. Beyond them, I heard more shouts.
"We'll still take you in, though, if you want to be on our team,"
said Eddie.
"Even if you do dodge like a girl."
"Team?" I asked excitedly. Back at the academy, throwing snowballs was strictly prohibited. School officials were inexplicably afraid that we'd throw snowballs packed with glass shards or razor blades, though I had no clue how they thought we'd get a hold of that kind of stuff in the first place. Not that a snowball fight was that rebellious, but after all the stress I'd been through recently, throwing objects at other people suddenly sounded like the best idea I'd heard in a while.
Mason and I dashed off with the others, the prospect of forbidden fighting giving him new energy and causing him to forget the pain in his ankle. We set to the fight with a die-hard zeal. The fight soon became a matter of nailing as many people as possible while dodging attacks from others. I was exceptional at both and furthered the immaturity by catcalling and shouting silly insults at my victims. By the time someone noticed what we were doing and yelled at us, we were all laughing and covered with snow. Mason and I once again started back for the lodge, and our mood was so high, I knew the Adrian thing was long forgotten. Indeed, Mason looked at me just before we went inside.
Sorry, I jumped all over you about Adrian earlier.
I squeezed his hand. It's okay. I know Maya can tell some pretty convincing stories.
Yeah, but even if you were with him, it's not like I have any right.
I stared at him, surprised to see his usual brash countenance turn shy. Don't you? I asked. A smile turned up his lips.
Do I?
Smiling back, I stepped forward and kissed him. His lips felt amazingly warm in the freezing air. It wasn't like the earth-shattering kiss I'd had with Dimitri before the trip, but it was sweet and nice. A friendly sort of kiss that maybe could turn into more. At least, that was how I saw it. From the look on Mason's face, it appeared his whole world had been rocked.
Wow, he said, eyes wide. The moonlight made his eyes look silvery blue.
You see, I said, nothing to worry about. Not Adrian, not anybody. We kissed again, a bit longer this time, before finally dragging ourselves apart. Mason was clearly in a better mood, as well as he should have been, and I dropped into bed with a smile on my face. I wasn't technically sure if Mason and I were a couple now, but we were very close to it. But when I slept, I dreamed about Adrian Ivashkov. I stood with him on the porch again, only it was summer. The air was balmy and warm, and the sun hung bright in the sky, coating everything in golden light. I hadn't been in this much sun since living among humans. All around, the mountains and valleys were green and alive. Birds sang everywhere. Adrian leaned against the porch's railing, glanced over, and did a double take when he saw me.
Oh, didn't expect to see you here, he smiled. I was right. You are devastating when you're cleaned up.
Instinctively, I touched the skin around my eye.
It's gone, he said.
Even without being able to see it, I somehow knew he was right. You aren't smoking.
Bad habit, he said.
He nodded toward me.
You scared? You're wearing a lot of protection.
I frowned, then looked down. I hadn't noticed my clothing. I wore a pair of embroidered jeans I'd seen once but had been unable to afford. My t-shirt was cropped, showing off my stomach, and I wore a belly button ring. I'd always wanted to get my belly button pierced, but I had never been able to afford it. The charm I now wore here was a little silver dangly one, and hanging at the end of it was that weird blue eye pendant my mom had given me. Lissa's tchotchke was wound around my wrist. I looked back up at Adrian, studying the way the sun shone off his brown hair. Here, in full daylight, I could see that his eyes were indeed green, a deep emerald as opposed to Lissa's pale jade. Something startling suddenly occurred to me.
Doesn't all this sun bother you?
He gave a lazy shrug.
Nah, it's my dream.
No, it's my dream.
Are you sure?
His smile returned. I felt confused.
I don't know.
He chuckled, but a moment later the laughter faded. For the first time since I'd met him, he looked serious.
Why do you have so much darkness around you?
I frowned. What?
You're surrounded in blackness.
His eyes studied me shrewdly, but not in a checking me out sort of way.
I've never seen anyone like you. Shadows everywhere. I never would have guessed it. Even while you're standing here, the shadows keep growing.
I looked down at my hands, but saw nothing out of the ordinary. I glanced back up.
I'm shadow-kissed.
What's that mean?
I died once. I'd